Welcome to the Innovation in Financial Inclusion podcast. I'm Andrew Wallace.
And I'm Paul Vick. We're from Community Finance Solutions at the University of Salford. Community Finance Solutions is a research unit specialising in financial inclusion and affordable credit.
In this episode, we'll be talking about Flex My Rent, which is a rent payment scheme that enables housing association residents to underpay their rent when money is tight and overpay when they have more money in the bank.
To learn more about the scheme, we've spoken with Damon Gibbons and Gemma Glass. Damon is the CEO of the Centre for Responsible Credit, an independent think tank looking to influence regulation and improve provision of credit. Gemma is the head of financial and digital inclusion at Sudden Housing, which is one of the largest housing associations in the UK, which has also piloted Flex My Rent together with the Centre for Responsible Credit.
Gemma, could you start by explaining how the scheme works?
Yeah, so Flex My Rent is a new offer to housing associations. We're the first in the UK to adopt it. And Flex My Rent really allows people to look at collecting rent over an annual period rather than on a weekly or monthly basis. And allows an individual to see where pinch points throughout the year may happen. So we might have predictable income shocks, for example, school holidays for people with kids or when an MOT is due. So it allows people to say, do you know what? It might be a pressure point there. I would like to underpay my rent. So rather than what we've known for quite a while in housing associations and rent collection in general is people might use that unofficially, so they might unofficially not pay at Christmas time, just use it as an overdraft. This gives like a formality and permission to do so. It allows us as an organisation to predict where income will flow and allows income officers to focus resources and time on people who may need the support more. So it formalises the arrangement, allows people to underpay when they would like to, and allows individuals to plan in advance of what their spending may be for what is a very predictable outgoing.
Can you outline the main steps for onboarding tenants in your organisation?
Sure. So we're still in trial phase, but the excellent thing is that we've got an online platform. So residents are invited on to a platform where they complete an income and expenditure and just a number of questions where they feel behaviour, you know, their attitude towards money. And that allows us to then be the notifications then pushed to our income team who review the application. And dependent on the answers on the income and expenditure and the questions, it can either be passported straight through to be accepted. It could be deferred for further support from our team and the financial inclusion team, or it can be an outright decline, which is very, very unusual. What we've done is that because we're in a trial phase at the moment, we have identified the people who we know will be best suited to the product. So that's residents who are less than 6 weeks of rent arrears, who aren't subject to the benefit cap, who are responsible for paying at least some of their rent, i.e. they're not in full receipt of housing benefit or universal credit, and that they don't have an alternative payment arrangement, because that says that there's some sort of a inability to manage money at that moment in time. It doesn't mean that somebody wouldn't be able to do it further down the line. So that's the target audience for us, because we know that they will be able to manage Flex My Rent in a more predictable way. And as I said, because we're in a trial phase of it, it allows us some sort of certainty that and gives residents the hope that they've got a better chance of success under the scheme, really, I would say. So once a person's accepted onto the scheme, they are given a visual cue, so they're able to see exactly where they are able to pay, overpay or underpay their rent. So say it's July that they underpay, then they would be able to underpay or pay nothing at all in the month of July. And it just gives them that ability to plan for their future.
Why did your organisation decide to implement the scheme?
Yeah, it's a really great question. I get asked that one quite a lot by peers in the sector as well. The reason we did it was because we knew that with, well, it was multiple reasons really. The universal credit was coming, and that was an entirely different way that people were expecting to receive payments based on what the benefit system was. So that was a huge motivation for us, that people were going to be getting their payments monthly anyway. So it allowed people to review how they were spending. It plays to the point of people, some individuals were using FlexMyRent unofficially anyway, so underpaying at certain pinch points throughout the year. And it meant, because as an organization, we spend a lot of money on income officers proactively contacting residents who are underpaying, then it means that we can reapportion and redistribute the resources to help people who really, really need it. So it gives us more predictability. And really, what was a huge, huge driver and where I got exec buy-in was that it changed the relationship between us as a landlord and residents, because it put them in control rather than us saying, no, you must pay on a weekly, fortnightly, or monthly basis. It empowered residents to take control of their money. And that was a huge, huge motivator for us.
And how many residents are using FlexMyRent?
So currently, there's 582 residents who are registered on FlexMyRent, but currently we have 151 people who are flexing to date. So
And
what that means is,
sorry, go
some
on.
people might have flexed in the first year and then said, you know what, it's not for me. What we did find, and this is something that we're still trying to smooth out, is with rent increase or rent changes, the person has to come back onto the portal and recomplete their submission again. And we found that there was a huge dropout from year one to after April the following year. So there's something that we've not quite got right there that we need to learn and change. And so that's what some of the research is looking into.
And what out sort of outcomes or what impacts has the scheme generated for tenants and for your organisation?
Yeah. There's been a huge impact in that currently 89.7% of the live proposals are either on or ahead of plan. So if you think about that, as I said, from an organisational perspective, that's pretty huge, because it means then that we've got that assurance that the people who have said, look, are doing what they said that they're going to do, and that our income is more guaranteed than it would have been if we didn't know that these plans were in place. There's also the nice softer things, like people's attitude towards us as a landlord. They feel trusted and empowered. So we've got that, the qualitative stuff and the quantitative impacts. For a huge, huge motivation for our income team is that there's a reduction in the amount of call handling. So there's an 80% reduction if you compare year on year to the cases, the exact same cases where the year before we would have to proactively send out texts, letters, phone calls to see what was happening on the account. If you compare the contact with those same residents, then there's around an 80% reduction in that contact. It doesn't mean that we're not engaging with the resident via the platform, but it means that the proactive work has reduced because we know where we're at with things. So that's a no-brainer for us.
Has the scheme worked better for some residents with specific characteristics and circumstances compared to others?
Yeah, interestingly, around 80%, again, that figure, are residents who are women, and the majority of our flexors are single parents. There's not really any main reason for that we know just now. That's what research that with our partners from the Centre for Responsible Credit and HACT are looking into, and we're really looking forward to understanding that more, because as I said, we've got the certain categories of people who would be eligible for it. It just seems to be resonating with that demographic more. So you're really interested in teasing that much more out. It might be, you know, this is my personal opinion, it could be because if it's a single parent and they're able to flex during certain pinch points that they know are predictable throughout the year, it just resonates. So that message is resonating with that demographic.
And what advice would you give to another organisation who's considering implementing Flex My Rent or a similar programme?
You need to get buy-in from the top. If you have belief in what the product is, and you have really, really strong motivation to do so from the top, then that cascades down. It's a huge, huge change in mindset asking somebody to effectively allow somebody to go into an overdraft effectively. So it's been a big mindset change, particularly for our income colleagues. So we've had a massive amount of training. It's a mandatory thing whenever an income officer starts with the organisation that everyone gets Flex My Rent training. And so that every single person within that income team owns their own casework within Flex My Rent. That was something that we learned from the first trial where it was just owned by one officer. And so it wasn't really well known or understood, whereas this needs to be part of our core service offer. And with people's understanding and the ability to use the platform, it's become more successful. So I would say that that's the two things. Get buy in and let the income officers understand the product, ask questions about it, but really just sell the benefits, the huge benefits that it can have on engaging with our residents, but also reduction in call handling, which is a huge motivator for income teams particularly.
And then, you know, you spoke earlier about that you need a buy-in from the top and that there's sort of associated like with more risks and everything, you know, with more the sort of increased risk. Has there been sort of, you know, new key sort of operational requirements for running the scheme? So do you need more capital or anything like that?
No, we don't need any more capital. What I would say is that we have been lucky because we're part of the trials that we are not having to pay for the platform. Others are having to pay for the platform usage. So it just depends on the size of the organisation, what the costs are for that. But apart from that, if you embed it just as a service as usual offer, then it's just... it's absorbed into staff running costs, really, because we've done a lot of the being the guinea pig in the first instance. We've learned a lot and can share that with other organisations as to what works well and what doesn't. So if it's a business as usual offer, then there's little capital the outlay for it. The only thing that I would say is that it's just about having the robust reporting and being able to give a reporting assurance upwards that the money's coming. If you can show on a monthly basis that we are on trend and we're on track, then that quells the doubt, I would say.
Thank you, Gemma. Now moving on to Damon. Damon, can you start by telling us a bit about the origins of Flex My Rent?
So Flex My Rent, it came out of a piece of work that we did in about 2015-16. We did quite a big literature review and also a review of projects in the field at the time, which were focused on efforts to improve the financial health of low income groups. And so that work was quite broad, but it did feature quite a lot of social housing projects, specifically because I think the big lottery at the time was funding a programme of work within social housing providers based around financial inclusion. And so there were a lot of projects that we spoke to that were grappling with the issue as to how to improve take up of benefits or deal with debts amongst that group. And we did quite a number of interviews, not just with the providers of those like financial education services or financial inclusion projects, but also with a number of social housing tenants themselves. And one of the things that came out of that for us was that, you know, clearly many of them were borrowing from very high cost lenders, and that could make their position with the payment of their rent much, much worse, because of the interest that they were paying, and many were getting trapped in a spiral of over indebtedness. But also that we then thought, well, how can we get them into more affordable sources of credit? And there had been some tie-ups between social housing providers and credit unions, for example. But there was a lot of friction in that process. People had to open a credit union account and take that step and effectively create a new relationship with the credit union to gain access to it. And many of them had different criteria for membership. You know, might have to save with them first or that sort of thing if we can get a loan. So we were keen to look at how to remove that friction and actually give people access to interest-free liquidity into households without that friction. Because obviously interest-free is as cheap as you're going to get any credit whatsoever. And that led us to think, well, you know, maybe landlords themselves could give people a bit more flexibility over bill payments, so that people could underpay or overpay at different times of the year. And the interviews that we've done with social housing tenants actually seem to indicate, because many of them were parents, particularly, that a lot of their expenditure pressures in the year were quite reasonably predictable. So it would be, you know, coping with the cost of Christmas, for example, or getting school uniforms together when kids went to school in the autumn. You know, they knew when those times were in the year because they often dreaded them, and that's when they'd previously borrowed. So we thought, well, on that basis, they should be able to provide a bit of a plan to the landlord to say, well, these are the months when I know I struggle most. Could I have a bit of flexibility in those months and underpay in those months? And these are the other months when things are generally a bit relatively better. So I could afford to pay a little bit more in those months to offset it. So that's what we thought, obviously, as a sort of research organisation, that we would simply write that up and somebody else would get on and deliver all of that. That's not how it transpired. There was a lot of interest in the concept, but in terms of other people taking it on and running with it, we didn't find that. So we decided that, well, actually, we'd better go ahead and trial it ourselves. And we did a manual trial, which was funded by Money and Pension Service, which was only a small number of residents, but it was about 60 residents or so over the year. And that seemed to have some really positive results for those tenants. So we then looked at how we could potentially scale up and create a digital means of actually generating these proposals and getting the decisions from income offices and all the rest of it. So that's where we're at now with a larger scale trial.
What is the eligibility criteria for allowing residents to join the scheme?
Sure. Yeah, there are some restrictions that we placed around the eligibility for it. So, you know, clearly people have to be responsible for paying at least some element of the rent directly to the landlord. So that takes out everybody else who's on full housing benefit, and that's being paid by the local authorities straight to the landlord. But obviously with universal credit, more and more people are actually responsible for the payment of their own rent. Than previously. Other eligibility considerations. We've had some discussions with the housing associations about this. Obviously, people who's in very high level of pre-existing rent arrears, they're not keen for obvious reasons. So if somebody's already had a notice of seeking possession served on them, or they're over 6 weeks in rent arrears, then they won't be invited to join the scheme. And then a couple of other considerations just in terms of the affordability of the rent in the first place. So obviously with things like the benefit cap, you know, it can be the case that people are just clearly going to be struggling to pay any rent, the rent in the first place. So there's usually some exclusion criteria around that sort of stuff as well. But other than that, it's anybody.
And then, sorry, you were saying before about, you know, you sort of did it on a small scale first, and then now you've expanded it out and scaled it up. I'm just wondering how many sort of housing associations have adopted this scheme now?
Yeah, so we're in trials with two housing associations at the moment. That's Southern Housing, who used to be Optivo, but they merged just in the last couple of months with Southern. So they've become Southern Housing. And then Metropolitan, who we have just literally started a trial with in the last few weeks. But the Optivo or the Southern Housing trial has been going on for some time now.
Okay.
So it's predominantly with that as an association. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then, so how many residents are now using FlexMyRent to vary their rent within those two sort of housing associations?
Yeah, so I mean, we've engaged around 650 residents so far, and those are people who've come and opened up a FlexMyRent account. Of those, we've had 245 plans actually submitted. But quite interesting, and about half of those have been approved. So at the moment, we've got around 125 people. What's interesting about those plans is that about a third of them don't actually ask for any flexibility at all when they start the plan. So these are predominantly residents who are in some level of arrears already, and I'm just using the platform to create a 12-month repayment plan on the arrears. But about two-thirds of those that do submit do ask for some sort of flexibility. So that's where we're at the minute. There's probably been about 160, 170 of those to date. And that flexibility varies quite a lot that they request. So we've had requests for as little as £50 in a year to around £3,000, you know. So there's a huge range there, but the average, the typical amount that people are looking for is around £500 flexibility over the year, and they'll usually ask for that in a couple of months. So £250 in 1 month of the year, £250 in another, and then look to pay it back over the remaining 10 months. So it would typically add about £50 a month to the remaining 10 months on top of the normal rent for them to pay it back.
I know the scheme has been running for longer with Southern Housing Association, but what effect has the scheme to date had on Southern and her residents?
Well, we've had some residents in the scheme for over 12 months now. And, you know, we've done qualitative interviews with those residents, and they seem impressed by the scheme generally. So they've used it for all sorts of things, you know, this sort of payment of bills, or whether it's helped them buy a cooker, or, you know, replace an essential item. A lot of them talk about the fact that it's given them greater peace of mind, so that they know that it's there. They can always come back and create a new plan at any time if the circumstances change. And quite a lot of them are saying that it's improved their level of satisfaction with their landlord. So they're obviously pleased that this has been offered to them as a scheme. I think in terms of their housing associations themselves, I think, A, they can see that the digital platform makes it very easy and very quick for them to make decisions, their income officers to make decisions about that. And we're looking at whether or not it's actually reduced the number of sort of outbound calls that would ordinarily be made when people slip behind with their rent over the year. You have to remember that the scheme effectively reverses the usual position, which is that if people start to struggle, let's say around Christmas or in January, what would ordinarily happen is the landlord would be chasing that missed payment or the underpayment, and that creates work, obviously, and creates time. It's usually the case that sours the relationship between the landlord and the resident. The resident kind of ignores the phone calls and all that sort of stuff until they're in a position to know what to do about it. So what the scheme effectively does is reverse all of that, so that the tenant is saying, well, I know I'm going to struggle at Christmas. I'd like this amount of flexibility. If you can give me that, then I'll really appreciate that. And, you know, this is how I'm planning over the rest of the year to actually make those payments up. It might not be the full amount in February. I won't just pay it all back. But over the next 10 months, I'll pay a little bit extra back and we'll get it back on track. So I think there's quite a number of benefits in there for the landlord, which we'll be picking up as part of the evaluation. In terms of actual payment performance, I have to say it's looking very good. So obviously we'll need to look at a general control group for all of this, which we've got independent evaluators in to do. But it's looking excellent in terms of the proportion of people who are on payment. And in fact, most people, well, taken as a whole, the average is that people are actually ahead of their plan slightly by a couple of £100. So that's looking extremely positive. So obviously, one of the biggest impacts of the scheme or key performance indicators is, does this actually reduce the level of rent arrears compared to the control group or not? But the early results on that are looking very positive.
So you've stated the positives of the scheme, but have there been any limitations?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, this is firstly, it's a digital platform. So we do find that a lot of people will struggle to get through the registration process online. So that does require people to come to our platform and verify their ID. The way that we didn't originally set that up was that we would verify their ID, name, address, national insurance number against the records of the housing association. But we found a lot of people, and tenancy reference numbers, but we found a lot of people would, you know, either struggle to find their tenancy reference numbers and get that wrong, or they'd put a couple of digits the wrong way around in the national insurance number, and that would lead to a bit of frustration. And, you know, a lot of people were struggling to just get through that registration process. We've made that a bit simpler recently, so we've shifted to date of birth, for example, which also has meant that we've got more people to market it to as well. And then we looked at some of the customer journey, just in terms of how the proposals were generated on the platform, and have simplified that as far as we can, particularly for people using the mobile phone, which a lot of our users do. So hopefully those things are making a bit of a difference in terms of the numbers of people that can get through that and actually generate a proposal in the first instance. A couple of other things that we've looked at yet, certainly around the communication side. So we're in a position where we can send emails out to our flexors on a monthly basis. And so we've looked at putting in more information around where they can check their benefit entitlements for free, places like Turn to Us, that sort of stuff, particularly with the cost of living crisis. And we're also able, because we ask quite a lot of support questions at the time the plans are generated, so it's a short questionnaire for people to tell us about how they're feeling about their finances. And from that, we can also identify people on prepayment meters, for example. So we're looking at a program, more targeted support for people who've told us that they're currently on a prepayment meter, obviously with the cost of living crisis and energy costs going up at the moment as well. So I think there's more that we can do. But that's all pretty good stuff, really, in terms of where the platform's at in helping to better target some of that activity. In terms of limitations as such, I don't think there's been too many of those. There are some technical setup issues with the housing associations, as you might expect. So we've got to have daily updates on the platform with regards to, you know, rent account balances and the monitoring of the plans, they have to be taken out of automated communications from the housing association around for example, if somebody said that they've agreed a plan to underpay in 1 month, that doesn't flag up post arrears on the normal housing association system and generate letters out, or they have to adjust the direct debits to actually reflect the plan that's been included. So there were some issues around some of the consistency of that initially, but we've ironed those out. And we've also provided much clearer guidance to income officers about when to accept and when to defer a proposal and what the conditions for that are. And the platform now actually suggests a decision to the income officer based on the criteria that have been agreed with the landlord. So I think some of the inconsistencies in decision making, which were apparent early on, have been ironed out. But that's taken quite a bit of work, as you might imagine.
If you were looking to expand the scheme, how do housing associations join the scheme?
Well, we're not quite ready for that yet. So, we're still in trials, but the evaluation should be out towards the end of this year. And as part of the outcome from all of that, we'll be looking at the pricing side of things. It's been built on Amazon Web Services, so the price of actually scaling it up or onboarding new housing associations is pretty low. And we've tested that now, obviously, with Metropolitan having just onboarded them as a separate trial. So it's relatively painless to actually bring new housing associations in. The platform itself can cope with, you know, as many residents as it needs to cope with. And we can also tweak the criteria on eligibility or some of the questions that could be asked of people to identify their support needs, or some of the criteria that actually recommends a positive decision or a negative decision. We can tweak that for each individual housing association with ease now as well. So I think, you know, what I'm saying, I suspect, is that we will be ready to go to market, if not towards the end of this year, then certainly early next year. But we need to think about what the pricing of that might need to look like, although we are expecting it, obviously, to be quite cheap. And it becomes obviously cheaper per tenant the more tenants that you've got in the scheme and using the scheme. So
what did you take away from these interviews, Paul?
Well, I learned that the scheme is All right, do you want to do it again? Sorry.
No, carry on, I can edit it out.
Okay. Well, I learned that FlexMyRent has been designed to provide social housing tenants with interest-free liquidity without having to incur interest costs, so thereby reducing their poverty premium. And I think what's interesting about it is that it formalizes something that already happens. So we know that tenants are already underpaying in some months when they're struggling. But the problem is that the housing association has to do an awful lot of chasing of unpaid rent. And I think what's innovative about it is also that it encourages residents to plan ahead. They have to look at the year ahead and plan their spending.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. You know, the fact that you're saying that it reduces the poverty premium, which, you know, is a major benefit, but there are other benefits of the scheme. I know these are based on initial results. You know, they've got an evaluation which is due to come out later in the year. You know, if you look at the benefits on the resident side of things, that around about 90% of residents are on track or ahead of plan. And then if you look at, you know, the benefits from housing association side, is that 80%, there's been an 80% reduction in call handling for their income officers. So there's clear tangible benefits of this scheme for both sides.
But ultimately, the scheme is not suitable for everyone. It's mainly suitable for those that have predictable spikes in expenditure, but also who pay at least a portion of their rent themselves. It's not suitable for those who have very unpredictable patterns of income and expenditure, or who are in severe financial difficulty, or who even with additional support, we've been able to use the digital portal, which is how people sign up to and manage their account.
And I'd say my final finding from this is, you know, in order to implement this scheme, there's going to be a need for a change in mindset for senior managers. You know, they need to be able to buy into this scheme. By buying into the scheme, they need to be able to implement this across the organisation. And what I mean by that is that it's like Gemma was saying, that income officers need to be trained to not just understand these products, but also to be able to exploit these products to the benefit of the residents. So first to summarise the two interviews, I say firstly that the scheme, you know, provides potential for residents to achieve greater financial independence. But secondly, you know, the scheme is only suitable for those who are facing expected expenditure increases, not for those who are likely to have high rental arrears or are likely to see unexpected income drops.
In the next episode, we're going to be talking about no interest loans with Sheena Murtagh from South Manchester Credit Union and Professor Chris Grover from the University of Lancaster.
And that's the Innovation in Financial Inclusion podcast with Andrew and Paul. If you want to find out more or contribute to the discussion, go to hub.salford.ac.uk/CFS or follow us on Twitter at CFS_SBS. Bye for now.